constantly in memory of Rafael Ben Meir Filmechel, and also in appreciation of a very, very cherished that we share together. I always get nervous when I introduce Rabbi Lieberowitz because I know so much about all the different theories that he's espoused there through the years about what people say and what they leave out. I'll just quote Rabbi Lieberowitz for Rabbi Lieberowitz, and pay you as well. The Navi Malachi tells us that there are periods in time in one of the things our great Rebbe has pointed out to us, that when the Navi says, I'll give you places to walk between things that are owning. So our Rebbe has always pointed out to us that one of the great levels of human being over a malach is that malachim are omdim. They stand, they don't move. You create it, and that's it, and that's it. Whatever malach is, that's what it is. A human being has that maila, because a human being gets to move. A human being gets to move up, gets to move onward and upwards. Rabbi Lieberowitz is always added, and when he quotes, he says that's why he loves to learn halacha. He loves to teach and learn halacha. It's one of the most exciting things in the world, because there's always movement. It's always something. It's what we do in life. It's so much of what we are. What I love when I get to learn halacha with and from Rav Lieberowitz is the fact that you're always moving with him. It's like literally, it's life. You get the chance, and you, those of you who come around the shiurim in the past, you know for a fact that those who get to listen to his daf shiurim and his mishnah shiurim and all his drushas, which by the way is another project we should undertake, right? It's a moving environment. When you are with Rabbi Lieberowitz, you know you are on a trip, you are going to move, and you're going to love every step of the way. It's really just such a pleasure to be around somebody who can direct us so much in life, and yet at the same time make us think that we're all just on tour with him in the process. And so it's my, with the greatest respect and pleasure, it's my honor and privilege to call upon Rabbi Lieberowitz, who will give our shiur.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rav Schwartz. It's wonderful to be together with you. It's an honor to be with you, and I certainly cherish our friendship, our decades-long friendship, and you've been such a mentor for me in so many ways and an extreme help, certainly in recent years, with your expertise and your wisdom and your guidance. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue to grant you the Hatzlacha to lead this Kehila and many other Rabbanim and holy people that you lead in the proper path for many years to come in good health. And we should work together to do good things for Klal Yisrael, Ezras Hashem. It's so good to see so many old friends here. So the title of this year tonight was something along the lines of Sukkot stories and Shilohs, something like that. So we're not doing that. It's not Sukkot yet. I didn't get any Sukkot Shilohs. I could talk about trees hanging over a Sukkot, but I don't think we want to talk about that. That's, it's a great topic, but, you know, not for right now. So I'll just share with you three Shilohs that came up over the course of the last week or so, 2 weeks, I would say. All three of these came in the last 2 weeks, so I didn't have a chance to give a shiur about any of them yet. And maybe we'll take a vote, and you'll tell me which one you want to talk about, which one of them interests you. If we have time for more than one, maybe we'll do two. We'll see what's our... What? Sorry? So let's go through one by one. I got this Shaila twice on Yom Kippur, or after Yom Kippur, rather. It hasn't been that long since Yom Kippur. Twice, two people with slight variations, but here's how it goes. A fellow was getting ready for Yom Kippur, and he's talking to his brother-in-law right before Yom Kippur. And in one of the situations, it was a brother-in-law. In another situation, it was a close friend or relative. And they were schmoozing. And, they went through the classic, would you please be mochel me for anything I may or may not have done, this and that. And the brother-in-law says to him, and would you please be mochel me for all of the terrible things I said about you behind your back this year? Meaning he didn't get specific as to exactly what he said, but he let it slip that I have actually said some terrible things about you behind your back, and would you please be mochel me? And it's literally the last hour before Yom Kippur. So he says, yeah, of course I'm mochel you. And then for the next 25 hours, all he kept on thinking in his head was, I can't believe my brother-in-law was speaking badly about me behind my back. And like, he came to the realization that no matter how much of an avoda it was over those 25 hours to try to believe what he had told him an hour before Yom Kippur, he did not believe what he had told him an hour before Yom Kippur. He was not mochalim at all. And so his question was, do I need to let my brother-in-law know that I'm not really mochel him so that we can have this conversation again at a later date? Or can he just go on his merry way thinking that I'm mochel him, and it's not my responsibility to tell him that, belibi, you know, deep in my heart, I'm in fact not mochel him at all? So that shaila came up twice. That's not the normal mechila shaila. The normal mechila shaila I get, and I'm sure you get this also, is someone feeling very guilty in the days leading up to Yom Kippur, saying, someone did something terrible to me, they've yet to ask for mechila, and I can't bring myself to be mochel them. If they can't even ask, and they don't even know that, I can't bring myself, I'm trying my... That's the normal mechila shaila. We're not going to discuss that one. So this is one about insincere mechila. Mechila was granted, but it was not sincere, or the person realizes after some time it was not sincere. Second shaila, a Talmud of mine from who's learning in the Gris Kolel in Eretz Yisrael has this wonderful thing where he has a chavrusa with his younger brother on the phone. His younger brother is a high school student, a ninth grader in DRS. Some of you have heard of it, and he learns Mishnayos with his younger brother. So they were learning a Mishnah, and he was trying to explain to his brother the concept of Hegdish. So he said, you know, you could take anything and turn it into Hegdish. You can say, you know, he noticed that his brother, they were on a Zoom call, and his brother had his Xbox controller in front of him. So he said, you know, like you could make your Xbox controller Hegdish, and then it would belong to the Beis HaMikdash just by declaring that it's Hegdish. Now, it wouldn't have Kachi Mizbeach. They wouldn't be able to bring it as a carbon because there's no carbon called Xbox controller. There's an Ola and a Chatos, but there's no Xbox controller carbon. So it would just be Lebetek HaBayis. It would be something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So his younger brother said, oh yeah, that's so cool. And he picks up his Xbox controller and he says, my Xbox controller is Hegdish. And he's like, what did you just do? he said, you told me you can make it Hegdish. He said, yeah, but why would you do that? Meaning, if you make it Hegdish, then, like, we don't have a why would you do that? And he said, it doesn't work anyway, right? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so, you know, no harm, no foul. So, like, nothing could happen anyway. So he said, no, like, that might be worse. So the older brother wanted to know, like, is the younger brother's Xbox controller now no longer usable because it is Hegdish, and we have to wait till the Beis HaMikdash comes, and, you know, and the Beis HaMikdash will have to figure out what to do with an Xbox controller. So that is shaila number two. Shaila number three, a Rebbe from a yeshiva high school, modern Orthodox yeshiva high school, texted me on Tzom Gedalia that the following episode happened in his classroom on Tzom Gedalia. So there is a student A, we will call him Adam. Right, Adam bought food for student B. We'll pick a name that starts with a B. We'll call him Brian. Right, so Adam went out and bought food for Brian using his Uber Eats app. Apparently, Brian doesn't have the Uber Eats app, or his parents don't give him a credit card to connect to the Uber Eats app. So Adam's got the Uber Eats app, and he orders on Tzom Gedalia food for Brian from Dunkin' Donuts. When the food arrives, Adam went out to collect the food from the driver and to get Brian out of class so he can give him the food. So the Rebbe sees Brian sneaking out of Gemara class, and he's like, hey, where's Brian going? And he sees that he went to meet Adam in the hallway. And he gives Adam $10, and he sees that Adam's about to give Brian a Dunkin' Donuts bag, and they're going to have like a little kiddush with Dunkin' Donuts in the hallway on Tzom Gedalia. So the Rebbe, irate, comes out of the classroom, grabs the Dunkin' Donuts bag from Adam, who had brought it into the building, and throws it in the garbage. So Brian, without missing a beat, see, Adam is still holding the $10 bill that he had paid Brian for the food. So Brian, without missing a beat, grabs his $10 back from Adam. And Adam said, what did you do that for? He said, well, you didn't give me my food. He said, well, the Rebbe threw the food out. He's like, yeah, I didn't get it. I'm not paying you $10 for food I didn't get. He said, but I'm out $10 on my Uber Eats app. It's my parents' credit card. Like, he's like, I'm sorry, I don't know you the money. So the Rebbe's like, wow, this is a great shaila. I mean, it's a very unfortunate shaila because there were two kids that were going to eat on Tzom Gedalia for no apparent reason. But the shaila is, who owes the money? And the truth is, the Rebbe didn't think of this, but there are three possibilities of who's out the $10. It's not just Adam or Brian, right? The other possibility is not the Rebbe. The Rebbe owes $10. Who told him to throw out somebody else's food? It doesn't belong to him, right? Maybe that's just an overt act of Geneva in front of two Pasala Edom that he did. And he owes the money, you know. He admits that he did it, and he admits that he was pretty upset. at the moment. So that is Shaila number three. These okay? We'll stick with one of these three Shailas. Okay. So let's take a vote. So what were the Shailas? Number one was the insincere Mechila. Number two was the holy Xbox. Xbox controller. I don't want to overstate the case. And number three is Tzom Gedalia garbage pail lunch. Right? So okay. Everyone have in their mind which one they're interested in talking about? Just think about that for a second so you can vote in a second. Okay, so we're going to vote by a show of hands. All those who would like to talk about insincere mechila? Who's counting? Okay, all those who want to talk about the holy Xbox? Seems like fewer. All those who want to talk about some Gedalia garbage pail lunch? Well, it's either one or three. You think it's three? I think it's, okay. So the Tzom Gedalia garbage pail lunch. That's what it is. Okay. So the first thing I think that you need to talk about over here, truth is, once we get past point number one, it becomes a very complicated Choshen Mishpat Shaila. But I think the first thing that we need to talk about over here is, does a Rebbe have a right to do such a thing? Meaning, it doesn't only happen with Dunkin' Donuts on Tzom Gedalia, right? When I was a kid, this would happen if you had, if I went to like a pretty yeshivish summer camp. So if you had an Archie and whatever Veronica and Jughead, they would it was similarly contraband, and they would tear it up and throw it. So they allowed to do that. I remember one kid saying, "You're a ganav, you stole from me." I think someone who works in Camp Dora Golding told me that Rabbi Finkelman, does that make sense? Any Dora Golding people? That Rabbi Finkelman would pay the kids, he'd buy it. Whatever contraband it was, he didn't want them to feel like, oh, the Rebbe's stealing something from me. So he would pay them. He would buy it and then throw it out. They would see that he threw it out, but at least he was throwing out his thing, and the kid wasn't out money. It's a great business idea, by the way, if you want to go buy it wholesale and keep selling like cigarettes from a pickleman who's going to throw them out. But it's actually a similar question to a question that Rabbanim get a lot, which is when do you have an issue of Hashavas Aveda on things that are contraband, right? Things that are prohibited for one reason or another. A good friend of mine from Eretz Yisrael told me recently, he's a big Talmud Chacham, he told me that he put on his jacket one day and he put his hands in the pocket and he noticed that there were two cigarettes in the pocket of his jacket, and there's only one thing. He never smoked in his life, and he doesn't know how cigarettes ended up in the pocket of his jacket. And then he was thinking it wasn't any of his kids. He was thinking that the previous day he had a meeting in Yerushalayim, and when he went to the meeting, he had put his jacket on the hook of the door, and he noticed that there was another jacket there at the same time. So he checked, is this actually my jacket? And it was in fact his jacket, but apparently the other guy in the middle of the meeting must have thrown a couple of cigarettes into what he thought was his own jacket. It was really my friend's jacket. And now he's got two cigarettes that he knows who they belong to. It was the other guy that was at the meeting. So does he have a mitzvah, a Shavas Aveda, on the two cigarettes that he found in his jacket pocket? Now, if he does have a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, not only Hashavas Aveda, there's a mitzvah of Shmiras HaAveda. A person has to protect an Aveda, and I didn't know this, but my friend somehow knew this, that if you leave cigarettes out for too long, they get stale and are bad, and you need to like wrap them in something in order to protect. So does he have Hashavas Aveda? Does he have to protect them? So a similar question about contraband, but let's keep it to teachers. So if a teacher finds something that a student is not supposed to have, whether it be food on Tzom Gedalia, whether it be a pack of cigarettes, whether it be kids don't smoke cigarettes anymore, they vape instead, but whether they, which is a big problem for rabbis, by the way, because I don't know if you've had this experience. You go to a wedding hall that's not like one of the frum halls, and they don't prepare ashes for the head of the chassan. So it used to be, when we started out in Rabbanus, it was easy. You go to the kitchen, you find any random worker, and you say, "You have a cigarette?" And he says, "Sure." And you burn it, and you get some ashes, and then you put that on the chassan's head. Now, they're all vaping. Like, what are you supposed to do? Where do you get ashes from? So it's, the only ashes are like the greasy ashes from the cooking of the food, and that, like, you don't want to put that on the chassan's head. That's unpleasant. So, So the shaila is, is a teacher allowed to confiscate things? So there was actually a big back and forth in the journal Tchumen, in volume 8 of Tchumen, a back and forth among contemporary Rabbanim, whether a teacher is allowed to confiscate things. The Rambam in Hilchus Geneva, and the Shulchan Aruch in Chosh Mishpah in Shin Mem Ches, tell us how serious the Isser of stealing is, that even if you steal the tiniest amount, it is Asser, and it's even Asser to steal Almanas Lemekat, you're stealing to get it as a joke, or to give it back, or for good reasons, you're stealing because you know that if you steal, you'll be able to pay Kefel, and you're stealing from a poor person who won't accept tzedakah from you. So if I steal, and then the Beis Din makes me pay double, so that will be my way, of my end around, to be able to give him tzedakah, because he won't take tzedakah from me. Not allowed to do that either. You're not allowed to steal for any which reason, even if you're stealing for a joke, even if you're stealing in a non-serious way. Stealing is bad, right? You heard it here first. You're not allowed to steal. Stealing is really bad. So Rabbi Yehuda Henkin, in his Tshuvas B'nei Banim, and it was originally published in a Tchumen article, tries to make the case that no Rebbe or teacher has any right to confiscate property of the students. Even if the students are not allowed to have the property, he has no right to do so. On the other hand, Rabbi Asher Bush from Frisch, who's a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, has a couple of volumes of Tshuvas, so in his Tshuvas Shoel B'Shlomo, Simen Nun Zayin, as well as a number of other Rabbanim that wrote in Tchumen, all disagreed with Rabbi Henkin about this issue. So where's the raya? Like, prove it one way or the other, that a teacher is allowed to take something. I mean, apparently, you know, this wasn't a common thing. There's no Gemara about this. There's no Rishon that directly addresses the issue, because apparently teachers weren't taking stuff away from kids till very recently. Why not? No one had anything. No, what kid would have anything? Jews were all poor and they didn't have anything. So there's nothing to take away. So this is like a very, it's a very happy shaila in the sense that kids actually have things, often things that are quite expensive. And, the school has a rule, you're not allowed to have an iPhone, and the teacher realizes that the kid has the newest iPhone. So is he allowed to take that away from the kid? So they have to figure out different sources, different rayas. So I'll mention briefly three potential rayas. One raya that they bring is a Mishnah in the first parak of Maseches Midos. So you got to have a little bekius, right? Mishnah Maseches Midos. It's one of those Masechtas that, you know, many people don't even know exists, right? Maseches Midos. I often tell the story of the DRS 11th grader who used to learn together with his older brother, who was in YU at the time, every Shabbos afternoon. And what they chose to learn together was Maseches Temura. And they finished Maseches Temura together. And at the Siyum, the 11th grader, who's a very, very bright student, said that he took a poll of 20 DRS 10th graders to ask them if there's a Masechta called Maseches Temura. And he said, half of them said that there's no such Masechta, and the other half said, there is, but you're pronouncing it wrong, it's Truma. So there is, in fact, a Masechta, there's no Truma, there's Trumos, and there's a Maseches Temura as well, and there's also Maseches Midos. What's Maseches Midos about? So Midos is the measurements of the Beis HaMikdash and how things looked in the Beis HaMikdash. So it's interesting, you have to... It's complicated to think about the midos of everything. Bayis Rishon was slightly different than Bayis Sheni. Bayis Shlishi is different than Bayis Sheni and Bayis Rishon. So, like, to figure out what a Beis HaMikdash is, so, like, what do you look at when you're trying to figure out what the Beis HaMikdash is, and even where exactly the Beis HaMikdash is located and the different size of the different parts of the Beis HaMikdash. But anyway, Imasech's Midos talks about, the Mishnah, Perek Aleph Mishnah Beis, talks about none of those things. It talks about a man who is called who was the guard that led to the Harabayis. And the Ish Harabayis would be the overseer of all the guards. He had to make sure that the guards were doing their job and that they weren't, you know, that they were staying awake and they were alert. And any guard who was asleep, the Ish Harabayis would say Shalom Alecha. If he saw that he was dozing a little bit, he would say Shalom Alecha. If the person, you know, was clear that he was sleeping, either by he didn't respond or he would say, well, you know, like he would just like be shaken out of his sleep with that Shalom Alecha, then the Ish HaRabayis would take his walking stick and he'd give the guy a little zetz, and he was also allowed to burn his clothing. That he had a little torch and he would burn the corner of his clothing. Imagine waking up that way. You know, that's quite an alarm clock. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in the Mishnah says that one time his uncle, his mother's brother, was sleeping on the job and they taka burnt his clothing. So what right does the Ish HaRabayis have to go burn somebody's clothing? So the Gemara in Maseches Tamid, also a real Masechta, on Daf Chav Zayin and Beis, says that Hefker Beis and Hefker, so he's allowed to do that. So maybe you see that when someone has the job of supervising other people, and the other people aren't doing what they ought to be doing, they're not behaving in the way that they're supposed to be behaving, maybe he has the right to take advantage of their property and to damage their property as a way of motivating them or encouraging them to do their job better. The Tiferes Yisrael in Maseches Midos says that that it was dafka mida k'neged mida, because how did the guy fall asleep on the job? You fall asleep when you're warm and cozy. So his clothing was keeping him warm. So okay, we'll take away the clothing that keeps you warm. You know, it's the equivalent of yanking the blanket off the camper that's sleeping too late. You know, so the counselor comes and yanks the blanket off of him. I remember when I was a kid in camp once, when I was a teen in Camp Masora, the counselor came and he started pulling the blanket from the kid to wake him up, and the kid was like, it must have been in the middle of a dream. He just from a sleeping position, boom, decked the counselor like square in the jaw. The next day, the counselor came with a hockey helmet. He said, "Would you please, sir, please wake up?" So now the camper is a very chashev harav, and he's doing good things. But at that point, I don't know what was going through his head. So the Tiferes Yisrael says that so it's a mida k'neged mida. He deserves to have his clothing burnt because the clothing is what allowed him to sleep in the first place. So that's raya number one, that maybe you're allowed to do that. So Rabbi Hankin says, it's not really a raya, because that was a special, obviously it made a special takana, that he was authorized to do that. Whoever made a special takana? The teachers are authorized to do that. I don't know that every teacher and Rebbe is authorized to do that. A second raya, anyone think of a second raya, that where we do grant certain permission to teachers in halacha, that normally we wouldn't allow a civilian to do? Hitting. Oh, okay. So the Gemara Makos says, we do not do this anymore, and this is not permissible anymore according to any posik, as far as I know. But strictly speaking, Medina de Gemara, Medina de Shulchan Aruch, a teacher and a parent are allowed to hit a child in order to discipline them. It comes up in Maseches Makos in the context of a teacher who maybe got so out of hand that he hit the kid so hard, Rachman al-Utslan, that he killed the kid. Right? And does he go to Gullus or does he not go to Gullus for killing Bishogeg because he was Osik Bidvar Mitzvah? So apparently hitting a child is something that's within a Rebbe's rights, within a teacher's rights. So the Gemara says that it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. And then the Gemara says, and it's a mitzvah even to hit the kid that's behaving, the good kid, to further discipline him, to get him more. I remember when I was in Karen B'Yavne, there was a Rebbe, Rav Dimmelman, who was not my Rebbe, but he was a very, very lively person. Meaning if he was giving, I remember he gave Shir Klali once in a while. There were a bunch of shtenders on the stage where the Rashiva sat and the Mashkiach sat. By the end of the Shir, none of them were on the stage anymore. I don't know what he did. He would just like pick things up and throw them. And I was just like, get out of the way. He was like, we run back and forth from one end of the stage to the other. So I remember one of our chaverim, who was a few years older than me, told me that he was sitting in Shir once, looking in the Gemara, and Rav Dimon came over to him and just whacked him across the face. Like, he would get fired like this today, right? And he looked up and he said, "Rebbe, I was looking inside." He said, "Now you were, but what about all the other times that you weren't?" Okay, so apparently this used to be a thing that apparently Medina the Gemara, Medina the Shulchan Aruch, a Rebbe is allowed to do that. Now, if a Rebbe is allowed to hit a child now, we wouldn't allow that anymore. Why not? A, because it's illegal, but also because we only do things in chinuch that are effective. if something is not an effective form of chinuch, then it's no longer permissible. Rav Meir Tversky pointed out that a lot of the issues of religious coercion that you would find in earlier generations are no longer effective, and therefore no longer advisable nor permissible, because they become more of a turnoff than to accomplish the goal that you want them to accomplish. So we wouldn't. But if a teacher believes that by making an example of taking away someone's cigarettes or someone's, you know, depending on the yeshiva, someone's iPhone or some of whatever, that he's going to make an example and the other kids will learn from that example, and the child himself is going to learn from that example, and he's not physically harming the child, and he's not doing anything that's against the law, so is he allowed to do that? Is he allowed to go and confiscate property? So maybe a kal v'chomer, that if Medina the Gemara, you're allowed to hit the kid, so of course you should be allowed to damage his property. So that is raya number two. There is a Ramban that's quoted by the Ritva and Maseches Ksubas that they all quote that makes a kal v'chomer, that if the halacha allows someone to harm somebody else in certain circumstances, then for sure by taking his property, kal v'chomer taking his property, that's considered like a lower level. So then for sure that would be allowed. So that is raya number two, that a teacher is allowed to do this. So again, raya number one was the ishar abayis burning the clothing. Raya number two is the fact that a teacher is allowed, technically Medina de Gemara, allowed to strike a child. Raya number three they have is from a halacha in Shulchan Aruch in Chosh Mishpat Simin Reish Lamed Aleph, based on Gemara Babasra Daf Chasam Beis. Tells us a basic rule, which is that if you have a group of people, let's say in a trade union or something of that nature, where they get together and they make rules for membership of that union, let's say they agree that when it's this person's day to sell his stuff in the market, none of us are going to go into the market that day and sell our stuff in the market that day. Anyone who fails to abide by those rules will suffer whatever sanctions they impose among the members of that group. And they're allowed to make such rules as long as everyone buys in. But assuming everyone buys in, that would be okay. Now, there are many schools nowadays that will make a student and parents sign a handbook in advance. When I was teaching at the TRS, that was standard, that every student, did the students read the handbook? Of course not. I mean, there would be like one or two in every class. Those are the ones that are going to be lawyers when they grow up. But the students typically didn't read the handbook. Sometimes a student knew it too well. According to 3A, technically I'm not in violation. But most of the students did not read the handbook, but they signed it. They signed it anyway. And if you're putting your name on something, it means you're committing to it. And if you choose not to read it, and you have reason to believe that it's all, whatever's written in there is reasonable, so then that's a commitment, and a very trusting commitment to whatever it says in there. I happen to think that, I get a lot of questions, I'm sure you do also, about people, using illegally downloaded things, or someone else's Amazon account, or someone else's Netflix, all these kinds of things. So leaving aside, you shouldn't be on Netflix anyway, or whatever, leaving all of that aside, is it mutter to do that? So I always say, well, in the license agreement, when you click I agree, are you agreeing not to do what you just did? So they said, whoever read that? Yeah, I know, but you signed it. You agreed to it. So I think you should be bound by what you agreed to. Meaning, you assume that the company is putting something reasonable out there, and you're agreeing to what are reasonable rules. So if everyone agrees, and people, the parents sign and the students sign the handbook, and it says clearly in the handbook, you're not allowed to have these things. And the consequences of having these things is you may get it taken away from you. So then, l'chora, that should make it mutter. It's hard to argue that one. It's just that the handbooks don't always make it clear that you'll have it taken away from you. Sometimes they just say, you'll suffer a suspension or whatever, a warning, then a suspension. But if that's what it says, then that's what it says. Even Rev. Yehuda Herzl Henkin, Zichrono Livracha, says that it is that if it's something that's dangerous, then of course you're allowed to confiscate. I mean, if it's drugs, it's a gun, it's something that's mamish dangerous, then you're allowed to take the item. Now, taking the item is different than destroying the item. Most of the rabbanim who wrote in that Truman journal said, yeah, we're talking about confiscating the item, but not to throw it out, not let it destroy something that belongs to somebody else. the teacher has a din of a shomer, and shomer has responsibilities. So what often happens, and what they really discuss, so I don't want to get into the details of it right now, is that a teacher takes something. What does he do with it as soon as he takes it? Where would the teacher typically put it? In the drawer. He opens the desk drawer, throws it in the desk drawer. And when class is over, what does he do? Forgets all about it and walks right out. And some other kid remembered, oh, 38 minutes ago at the beginning of this class, the teacher took so-and-so's iPhone, and someone else, a Ghana from the class, goes in and takes it for himself. Now, who's responsible for that? It's very likely that the teacher's responsible for that, because he's at least a shomer on someone else's stuff. Okay, is he a shomer chinam or a shomer sachar? You know, what level of responsibility does he have? That's what they debate. You know, there's what to debate. Do you say, well, the teacher is paid because he gets a salary, so he's paid to watch these things? Or you say, no, that's not what a teacher is paid to do. A teacher is paid to teach. All the other stuff he does for free. You know, the confiscating things he does for free. The watching the contraband in his desk, that he does for free. He doesn't get paid to do those things. So that could be a machlokas, whether he's a shomer sachar or a shomer chinam. There's a further discussion that we're not going to get into right now, whether you have the status of bail of imo. The halacha is that a watchman or a borrower who employs the owner of the item that you're watching or you're borrowing doesn't have to pay. It's a patur called bail of imo. So do you have that patur when you're a teacher? Meaning, because the student is there with you the whole time. So the student being in your care, is that the same as you hiring the student, that the student is sort of given over to you? Okay, that's a lamda shayla, and it's an interesting shayla. I'm not going to get into it, but it depends on interesting things. Now, let's assume for a moment. Let's not assume. Let's start with this. Was the teacher allowed? In this case, the Rebbe is the one that sent me the Shaila, and he was very proud of what he had, meaning he was pretty confident that he had done the right thing. Do we have to break the news to him that you actually did something wrong? So what does it sound like? Why not? But is he allowed to throw it out? I mean, you confiscate, yeah, but then you got to be a showman.
What about the fact that he's preventing
from
doing it
very long? So la'frushe me'isura l'chora, again, you're allowed to take it away to prevent them from doing an isser, and he probably has an obligation to prevent them from doing an isser. La'frushe me'isura. So he's stopping them from doing an isser, but l'chora, he should just put it away until the fast is over. But where did I say it was? What was the item? It was Dunkin' Donuts. You ever try a Dunkin' Donut 12 hours later? It's not going to, right? Meaning no one's going to want it. Not the hot coffee, which is not going to be hot anymore, and not the Dunkin' Donut 12 hours later. So the only way really that Fusha Miyasur is to ruin it one way or the other, no one's, the kid is totally, if you were to tell the kid, you can't have this until 8 p.m. this evening, he would say, forget it. You know, okay, so I'm not going to have it. He's not going to be interested in having it. You can't sell it at 8 p.m. that evening. You're not going to be able to, there's no value to anybody at 8 p.m. that evening. So maybe the Rebbe didn't do something that was us. Are we in agreement so far? I'm not sure on this. Yeah.
That would be his decision. If the Rebbe said you can't have the link, he could say, okay, we'll throw it out. That's the owner's decision. But it's not the Rebbe's.
Okay, so it gets interesting, right? Let's say at 8 p.m., it's, you know, it was worth $10 at 10 a.m. when this happened. At 8 p.m. that night, when the fast is over, it's going to be worth $1.50, let's say, right? Let's say it's worth $1. So maybe, the difference is not the Rebbe's responsibility, because I had an obligation to take away that $8.50 of value from you. I only threw out the last $1.50 value. The Rebbe could also argue that in order to make a point, he felt like he had to throw it in the garbage, that, it had to be something. He had to take a stand and, make some, like, right. So it could be. That's
he
possible.
Can sell it to somebody else. He can.
To whom?
Well, to the janitor.
To the janitor or whatever. So it has value even that day. Or to Nebuch, a kid who's sick or whatever, who's unable to fast. Yeah, okay. So maybe it does have value. Yeah.
But if the kid had already
broken his fast. So there's a misconception that once a person breaks their fast, that, you know, oh, it's broken. It's like, meaning if you accidentally turn a light on Shabbos, you can't just be like, might as well drive to the football game, you know, like, you know, so, It's not comparable. I know. I'm just making a joke. But there, so much so. Rav Shechter told us, Moreinu Hagaon Rav Shechter Shlita told us that Rav Soloveitchik was asked once about a guy who was a cholish yesh basakana who had to eat on Yom Kippur, because only a cholish yesh basakana is allowed to eat. That's also an important thing to remember. A lot of times people are unaware of that. They assume, oh, shiurim is just like if you know, like you have a little headache, and then if you can eat a full meal, that's you need to be cholish yesh basakana. No, you have to be cholish yesh basakana to eat anything on Yom Kippur. Now, we define a cholish yesh basakana a little bit differently than most doctors would. We would define it as even a svek sveka shel sakana, and even if in 10 years from now you're going to die one day earlier, or might die one day earlier because of fasting, that's also svek sakana. But you can't eat if it's just going to be a headache that you'll get past, you know, the next day. So anyway, so there's a cholish yesh basakana had to eat on Yom Kippur, and they asked for Soloveitchik if he could daven for an amud, because he was the Baal Tefillah, so he wanted to daven for an amud. So Soloveitchik said absolutely not. He says, well, why? Because he's not fasting. So someone's not fasting, he's not allowed to daven for an amud. He says, no, nothing to do with that. It's because every ounce of energy you take out of him will require him to eat a little more or to drink a little more. So he's allowed to eat, but he's not allowed to just sit there pigging out all day. You know, so you try to minimize as much as you possibly can. Meaning, when we advise people to do shiurim, take an ounce and a half of Gatorade every 8 minutes or whatever the directions, you know, whatever variation of how much and how many minutes. I'm sure you have your mahalich, and every rav has their own mahalich of exactly how long and how many degradations of minutes there are if you need more and all those things. But when we advise people to do that, we typically say, so do it for a couple of hours, and that should give you all the hydration you need for the day. Like, you wouldn't do that, like, all day long. Meaning, I think Rav Neuberger pointed out that doctors say that to be fully hydrated, a person needs a liter and a half of liquid. So you get that in a couple of hours by doing shiurim. You don't need to be doing it all day long, unless, you know, you're worried about your meya bracha, so you want to get it with Asher Yatzar. So that's not a good enough reason. So as far as whether the Rebbe's chayiv or not, it's at least a good debate, right? It's at least a good debate whether the Rebbe's chayiv, and there's a very strong possibility that he's not chayiv for all of it, at least. So now, what about the students? So now let's say there's an $8.50 dispute among the students now, not a $10 dispute. So which of the students is responsible for the money? And keep in mind, there's a wrinkle over here, and that is that although he had already paid the money, the student in the class had paid the money to the student who had made the order, he also took it back. He took the law into his own hands. He was toe-face. So if the answer is going to be what it often is in Dine Mamanis when we're not sure what to do, what do we normally say in Dine Mamanis when we're not sure what to do? Right? So you have to... So who's being motzi mehu? You know, when the Shaila came up, you know, when our moment of suffix was, one guy had the money, but now that we're asking the Shaila, the other guy has the money because he took the law into his own hands already. So what exactly does this depend on? So I thought what this most likely depends on is, what was the relationship between Adam and Brian in this case? Adam who placed the Uber Eats order and Brian who had asked him to do so. Is it that Adam is a shaliach of Brian? Or is it that Adam bought something from Uber Eats and he is selling it to Brian? Right? Those are very, very different things. If I bought something and then I want to turn around and sell it to you and I never deliver the goods, so then I'm stuck, right? I didn't do my job. But if I am your shaliach, so when I bought it for you, I did my shlichus. And that means that when I was taking it from the Uber Eats guy, I'm you. Shluch shalom kamosa. That's the only coincidence. Shluch shalom kamosa, right? When I take it from the Uber Eats guy, I am you. So you are requiring it right then. And now, I'm not going to be responsible for some onus. You know, some unforeseeable crazy Rebbe comes storming out of a classroom and decides to chuck it in the garbage. I was doing exactly what you told me to do. You told me to bring it right into the building and to knock on the classroom, you know, to signal in the window of the classroom to wave to you so you'd sneak out and then you would get it. I did exactly as you told me to do. So I'm a perfectly good shaliach. Ah, so in shliach l'dvar aver. So I was thinking about that, also because of Daf Yomi recently. So can you make a shliach to buy you food on a fast day? Why not? I mean, is there any dvar avera in buying food on a fast day? Right? And I was also thinking there's a discussion in the poskim, we're running out of time already, but there's a discussion in the poskim about Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. Why is it that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira La Halacha? Why do we assume, let me just explain what that means in case not everyone's doing Daf Yomi. I shouldn't always assume the whole world's doing Daf Yomi just because I am. So normally there's a mechanism in Halacha called Shlichus, that if I make you my Shliach, I make you my messenger to do something, when you do it, you are me. You are acting on my behalf. If I decide that, you know, I'd love to show up to my own wedding, but the Jets finally made the Super Bowl on the day that I'm getting married, and I've been waiting my whole life for it. You know, I was born in whatever, 19. I haven't been born in 1977, but even if I was born 7 years before that, I never would have seen the Jets win the Super Bowl. You know, and I've been waiting my whole life for this. So, you know what? I'm not going to go to my wedding because, you know, like it's Super Bowl Sunday. We scheduled it for Super Bowl Sunday because the Jets never make it, and we knew that it was going to be fine. But then, as it turns out, you know, this is the year. So, this is not the year, by the way. But as it turns out, you know, that happened to be the year. So I decide I'm going to send a shliach. I'm going to send my friend. He's a Giants fan. He's going to go and he's going to do the kiddushin for me. So he says, "Harei Mekadesh to my buddy, b'tavah zokadash Moshe Yisrael in front of two witnesses." And the Jets fan is the one that actually gets married, even though he's not there. His shliach becomes like him, and that's a mechanism of agency that applies in the Torah. However, we also have a principle that ain't shliach l'dvar avera. That if I ask you to do something for me, but what I'm asking you to do is an avera, it's a prohibition. So then we can't say that it's as if the mishaleach is doing the avera. No, the shaliach is doing the avera. I ask you to go steal something, and you know that it's stealing. You know that it doesn't belong to you or me, and you take it. You're the ganav. I'm not the ganav. So why? Why is it that we don't use the mechanism of shlichus? So the Gemara has this idea, divrei Rav v'divrei Talmud divrei Mishomi, that what, you know, if Leibowitz tells you to steal something, and God tells you not to, why on earth would you listen to Leibowitz and not listen to God? So, you know, that's ridiculous. So there are two ways of understanding that. One way of understanding it is, you have a responsibility as a Jew to listen to the boss, right? And you're not allowed to listen to anybody else. The other way of understanding it is, that I, as the Mishaleach, when I told you to do something crazy like an Aveira, I didn't think you were going to listen. Because God told you not to. Why would I assume that you would listen when I tell you to do an Aveira? If God told you not, I never would have imagined that you would actually do it. So that's a machlokas aposkim on the page of Shulchan Aruch, how we paskin. What would the nafka mina be? The difference would be, what if I know he's going to do it? I know he's going to do it. How do I know? Because he's ordering Dunkin' Donuts for himself also. He eats every fast day. You know, he shows up, you know, during the break on Yom Kippur. No, Chas V'Shalom. But he eats on every minor fast day. He does it all the time. So I know that he would do it. It's not a shayla that he would do it for me. So then, if you say, like, the first Svara, then Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, because he's not supposed to do it. Well, he's still not supposed to do it. And therefore, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. So he's not my Shliach. But if you say Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira is, I never thought he was going to do it. Well, I did think he was going to do it. So then there would be shlichus over here. But I think either way, buying food is not really a Dvar Aveira on a fast day. Eating food is a Dvar Aveira. But buying food is not a Dvar Aveira. There's also an interesting discussion whether Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira applies to Yisurim D'Rabbanan. So, okay, it can be a very Leibedik sugya. Halach L'Maisa. What is he? Is he a shaliach, or is he? Or is he buying it himself and then selling it?
Buying himself.
You think buying himself and selling it? Why?
After the fact that he gave him the food.
Yeah, but you could be a shaliach even if you're laying out the money, meaning halachically.
Is he getting any extra money?
You could be an unpaid shaliach also. Meaning shlichus doesn't necessarily mean that you're being paid.
And sometimes it's that too. Like if he was selling it, he would have wanted more money. You'll buy something to sell someone else for the same price you bought it for.
Okay. Meaning it's an indication that he's not running a business.
Yeah.
Right?
It costs like $10, but he did it through Uber Eats, and they tack on more prices, but he's still going to charge him $10. Is that...
Okay. So that might make a difference. I mean, that, Shiloh, comes up all the time also, which we don't have time to talk about, is when someone sends you to do something, and because you put together a big enough order, you get extras. So, like, what are you? Meaning, is it that you're buying it and selling it to everyone else, in which case, fine, you can keep the extras. Or are you everybody's shliach, in which case, they're entitled to the extras. You're not the one that's entitled to the extra. So that happened. I had a famous DRS sushi shayla many years ago there was a place, Stop, Chop, and Roll, where you buy two rolls and you get one free. So one kid kept on going to two of his friends, and each of them ordered a roll through him, and he kept on taking the third roll for free for himself without telling them what he was doing. And then they caught on in like November, like it was 3 months into the school year, and they hopped what he was doing. So yeah, so that's the part of that. Or like you have someone arranging a Cholamoe trip, and they go on the WhatsApp chats, local WhatsApp chats, $30, I have no idea what the tickets cost, $50 a ticket to go to Great Adventure, you know, but we get a $30 group rate if you, whatever. And when you get the group rate, you not only get a cheaper ticket, but you also, they also throw in a few extra tickets. So who gets those few extra tickets, right? So that may also depend on this issue. I thought the pashtus is that he is a shaliach. And if he is a shliach, he did his shlichus. And I would think that the fellow that had wanted to eat the food is loses the money. I think tfisa does not help in such a case, and he has to give back the money, unless it's the teacher that's responsible, which I'm not convinced that it's not. It's a brand new shaylos that I haven't had a chance to ask the Gedolei HaPoskim, but it was nice to at least schmooze over some of the issues together with you. I wish everyone a Chag Sameach. Thank you so much for having me again.
It was great. I want to thank you all for joining us this evening.
Get 15% off a set of Brake Best Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.